I am Plata on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. We continue meeting some of the fascinating, talented people in New York now as John Miller joins me. The singer, bassist, and Broadway music coordinator is releasing a special 10th anniversary edition of his acclaimed album, Stage Door Johnny, John Miller Takes on Broadway. The album features a dozen familiar, legendary Broadway songs done in fun, engaging, and irreverent interpretations that are purely John Miller, from Hey There from The Pajama Game to Old Man River from Showboat, one of my favorites, Real Life Girl from Little Me, to Hernando's Hideaway from The Pajama Game. They are just fun, folksy, danceable numbers. As Paul Schaefer said of the album, Johnny takes a boogaloo down Broadway in this impressive reimagining of the classics. The numbers sound fresh, and certainly after 10 years, they're timely, and show the listener how versatile and enduring the music of Broadway is. John Miller has served as a music coordinator for over 130 Broadway productions over the last four decades, currently represented on Broadway by Tony Award winners Ain't Too Proud, The Life and Times of the Temptations, and the acclaimed production of Oklahoma. Upcoming is Tina, the Tina Turner musical. Among other shows include The Producers, Once, Jersey Boys, Hairspray, and Barnum, the music of which was by Cy Coleman. Mr. Miller made his Broadway debut as an actor in another Cy Coleman production, I Love My Wife. I'll ask him about a song in that production, Hey There, Good Times, which he performed, which is a personal favorite of mine. As a bassist, he has played for everyone from Madonna, Joni Mitchell, Bob Dylan, Frank Sinatra, the New York Philharmonic, and Tony Bennett, among many others. And for four seasons, Mr. Miller played Didi on the Amazon Prime series Mozart in the Jungle. This re-release is available Friday, the 21st of June, wherever you get music, and visit johnmillerbass.com, where you can order CDs. Please welcome to the Plante Online program, John Miller. Mr. Miller, good morning.
Please, the only Mr. Miller I ever knew is my father. Please call me John.
John, good morning to you.
Hi, John.
As I was telling you, this is just a terrific album. And what is it like for you, John, 10 years later, to have it re-released?
Well, you know, there was a period that it was a number of years that I didn't listen to it. And when I was driving back from upstate, I was playing it for a friend of mine about two years ago who, I guess for some reason, he had never heard it before. Maybe he heard it when it came out. Mm-hmm. And he said, man, he forgot how terrific it was. And terrific in that it just made him feel good listening to it. He said, it's hard to play the album and not put a smile on one's face.
Right.
And when he said that, I said, you know, I'm not sure that when the album first came out, that if it went out to as many people as we might have wanted it to then, and in listening to it extremely objectively,
mm-hmm.
I said, you know, these tunes really stand the test of time, and it's just something that I think would put a smile on a lot of people's faces listening to these tunes done in this way. So it got me sort of revved up again for, hey, let's get this out there again a second time.
Yeah, I was listening to it at my desk and in preparing for our chat, and you know, it made me smile, made me tap my toes, made me want to get up and, you know, move along with the sound. And in a way, it doesn't sound 10 years old because I guess the music is so versatile, it's so robust, and I mean, it's timeless, isn't it?
I think so. I mean, it's not by mere accident that people are still recording, making versions of those tunes.
Right. In terms of how to describe the sound, I mean, you take on these standards, but you play them in your own sort of way to your own ear. How would you describe that, say, to a listener?
Well, I don't know how I describe it to a listener, but I certainly know how these came about. I'm I'm a professional bass player. I'm not a professional guitar player. And I play guitar in my own way, and it sort of reminds me, many, many years ago, I was playing bass for Joni Mitchell. It was just many years ago, and it was just her on her acoustic guitar and me on acoustic bass. And she has a very, she had a very unique way of playing the guitar, because she did her own kind of tuning and her own kind of fingering. So those of us who are familiar with the guitar, oftentimes we can see that someone's playing a G chord or a D chord, and we sort of know where to go. But with the unique tuning that she had, one had absolutely no idea what chord she was playing. And I remember leaning over to her and sort of whispering, I said, "Joni, what chord is that that you're playing?" And she leaned over to me and she said, "I have absolutely no idea." So this is a long sort of blathering story, Joe, to basically say these songs generated from me sitting alone with holding the guitar, yeah, and just playing playing some little chord pattern with no agenda whatsoever. I didn't have any songs in mind, and I'm just riffing and, well, maybe watching a basketball game late at night, and all of a sudden I hear myself coming up with a version of "Wouldn't It Be Lovely." So that's how they all came about. Just from my own unique way of approaching these tunes on the guitar. And that's why they sort of sound the way they do. It's not like, you know, most people that we all know, they come up with a concept of an album. I'm going to do this composer. I'm going to do these tunes. Here's the sort of theme. I had no bloody theme whatsoever. It was me just sort of grooving on these chords, and from somewhere, just deep in my bowels somewhere, these songs just emerged, and that's how each one of them came out. And you know, I sing like a musician, and I'd sort of. I had no other way of doing these tunes other than the way they just came out organically for me to be doing them.
And what comes through, John, is the reverence that you have for these for this legendary material. I mean, that comes through every song that one listens to on this album.
Well, that's certainly nice to know. I mean, I don't think I had that in mind, but I do think in objectively listening to it, what I think came across, what I think happened, without me intentionally doing it, I think they are, these versions are very respectful and true to the essence of the songs. Mm-hmm. It's not like I said, okay, let's do a reggae version of this particular song. There was no, you know, conceptual idea of, let me make this song a tango, let me make this song a fill in the blank. Right. It just emerged very organically to how the only way I knew how to play those songs and kind of arrange the songs and put them together without really any forethought of what I was going for, other than what seemed and felt extremely natural.
And the sort of album that you've done isn't something that's done a lot nowadays. I mean, 40, 50 years ago, people like Andre Previn or Oscar Peterson, Louis Armstrong even, would do albums of Broadway material in their sort of way.
Right.
And I mean, I'm just thinking about the songs of My Fair Lady, for example. I mean, those became well known around the world because of guys like Previn or Peterson, etc.
That's right.
Do you think you'd do another album like this again?
I don't know, Joe. It's not on the horizon now because I'm pretty busy as a bass player and pretty busy as a music coordinator. But certainly the idea of doing another one is a very compelling idea.
I mean, I can think of a dozen songs that you could do.
Well, I have a couple of them in my back pocket, but I think I would pretty much do them pretty much the same way. I would just, you know, it's not even about looking for songs, in all honesty. It's about finding some kind of groove, and all of a sudden these songs just emerge from that groove, as opposed to me saying, oh, here's a song, how could I approach that song? That's the way that I think most people do it, and it makes a lot of sense. And I think if I was going to do something as a bass player, I might approach it that way. But as someone who's really not a guitar player, I allow it to come about from a very, very organic place.
Yeah. And you mentioned the work that you do as a music coordinator. When you obviously get the chance to listen to Broadway music, not just, say, revivals or some of these jukebox musicals that Broadway is seeing, but new material, obviously. There's such a rich trove of material that one can draw upon nowadays. The sound of Broadway, I mean, how do you feel about the way Broadway sounds, the sort of music that's on the street nowadays?
Well, look, from my vantage point as a music coordinator, it's very, very kind of simple from where I sit as a music coordinator. I get a phone call either from a composer, from maybe a general manager, from an orchestrator, from a producer, and they say to me, we have this show, and we would like you to help be the music coordinator for the show, help find the perfect musicians for this style of music, and it's my job to have an understanding of what the music creative team is looking for, and then help suggest musicians that would be able to, give the music team exactly what they want. So, and the thing that's sort of enjoyable about it, one of the things that's enjoyable about it, is that it can be different styles of music all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, everything from a Miss Saigon to the Temptations musical to Carole King stuff to Duncan Sheik, all different kinds of styles and stuff. So that's sort of my slice of the pie.
And so once the show is up and running, are you, the producers, for example, that ran for a long time. Are you involved throughout the run, or?
Non-stop.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's the great opportunity for road shows to, travel all around the country and to use terrific musicians all over in the country when we're going to, pick up local musicians. So that's usually part of the Broadway show experience is the next step is the road shows.
Yeah. And so I understand that you're involved with a Tina Turner musical that's coming in shortly.
Yeah.
You mentioned the Temptations musical Ain't Too Proud, which is running on Broadway now.
Right.
What is it like to in a way rediscover that sort of music?
Well, so many of these, as a bass player, studio musician, my friends and I the music of Carol King, the music of the Temptations, the music of Jersey Boys. These things are so primal to us that the opportunity to be involved with the next incarnation of this music is like it's a dream come true. I know very few musicians that don't love the Temptations. So the opportunity for them to play that music as authentically as it was originally recorded is just a great opportunity, and a great opportunity for the audience to connect with those with that music. The same thing with the Carole King show. I'm sure it will be the same thing with the Tina Turner show. So these are great opportunities for not only the musicians but the audiences that come, because this material is so deeply in the gene pool of so many of us.
The other thing I was wondering about, John, as I was preparing for our chat, is because you work in music, that's your job, do you have opportunity to listen to music for leisure, say? I mean, I was reading this profile in the New York Times about you and your apartment. I know that's where you work as well. How often do you just do kick off and play music for fun, say?
Well, there are two parts to that. First of all, myself, like many musicians I know, we enjoy practicing. Just being able to hold your instrument and work on new things, always listening, always playing. That's one thing that all musicians have in common. And there's nothing that's more enjoyable for a musician than to have the phone ring and to someone say, would you like to do this gig? Whatever the gig is, it's loads of fun. And I'm doing that all the time. And so whether I'm practicing at home or going out to do any kind of gig, the idea is that us musicians, we just love to get the phone to ring and to have us pack up our instrument, get out of the house, and play with other players. There's nothing that's more fun than that.
Yeah. And so at home, what are you listening to? What do you enjoy listening to, say, for fun?
Well, you know, it's funny. Most musicians that I know listen to less music than my painter, the plumber I know, the dentist I know. They're listening to music all the time.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that when I come home, I think the first thing I do musically is to pick up one of my instruments. So I can't say I'm one of these people when they say, you know, who are you listening to now?
Yeah.
I'd have to think about who I'm listening to. I know I have my own band, and we're always looking for interesting tunes for us to be doing. With the passing of Dr. John now, I've been listening a lot to a lot of Dr. John tunes, and had played, you know, I had one great opportunity to play with Dr. John.
Yeah.
So I'm always looking for new tunes.
Well, one of the fun things in preparing for our chat was to realize that I've been listening to you for years. One of the favorite things on my iPod is Hey There, Good Times from I Love My Wife.
Yeah.
And you're on that. That's you, isn't it? The whole tune, right? Michael
Correct.
Stewart, Cy Coleman. And was that your first acting job?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
I just love that song.
Me too. And I was there when Michael, and because I had known Cy, I had known Cy as a bass player.
Yeah.
And I had played on a lot of his albums and done some gigs with him way before I Love My Wife came into the picture. So I remember early on being at the Size house with Michael Stewart, hearing "Hey They Good Times" right after they had written the song, having no idea that I was going to be the one who was going to be singing it.
Yeah.
So that was a great 2-3 year experience working on that one.
Yeah, and what was also fascinating was that you didn't really act until Mozart in the Jungle after that, right?
Correct. Correct.
I guess you've been busy, right?
Well, you know, no one called me. No right. one said, "Hey, would you like to do this?" And, you know, as freelance people, my feeling is when anyone starts a conversation with, "Hey, would you be interested in," they don't have to finish the conversation. Because every freelance person would say, "Absolutely. Whatever it is, I'm interested in doing it." So, and it came pretty much, both those things pretty much came about the same way, Joe. I had a phone call from a casting director named Howard Fuhrer, uh-huh. who I had no idea who he was. And so I had given him my name, and he asked me if I'd be interested in coming down and, you know, singing a tune, and they say they'd give me some lines to read. And I said, sure. So I had no idea that it was going to lead to, right after I sang a tune and, you know, read a couple of lines, that they asked me to come down and talk with them right in the house. And so I said right then, would you like to be the music director and be involved with the show? So that's how that came about.
Yeah.
In as relaxed a way as that, I had no idea about Actors Equity. And when I told my acting friends about this, they couldn't believe it because they were still trying to get into Actors Equity at the time. And not dissimilar of, you know, 5 years ago,
yeah.
I get a phone call from a casting director who I had known from working on some shows together, named Doug Abel, who said, "Listen, we're casting actors for this TV pilot that the pilot just got picked up,
uh-huh.
and we've been auditioning terrific actors in New York. But none of them have the look, the gestalt, the oeuvre of a cat, of a guy that's been around on the scene for a while." He said, "I remember you and I Love My Wife in 1974.
Yeah, yeah.
Would you be interested in coming down and reading for this?" I said, "Sure, why not? You know, I had nothing to do that day." And they sent the... They sent some of the script and uh-huh. went over with my wife. Connie Bauer is a fantastic actress, and she gave me a couple of pointers. And I went down with, it wasn't the kind of thing where like the actor would go down and say, "Oh, I hope I get this part." It was just something to do for an afternoon. It was a new experience.
Uh-huh.
So I went there, and 12 hours later, they called. They said, "The part is yours. Can we speak to your agent?" I said, "I don't even have an agent." So I called up a friend who was an agent, and that's how the Mozart in the Jungle thing came about.
It's a great show. I've just discovered it, and I think I watched 6 episodes in the last week or so. And
right.
You're in it for all 4 seasons, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Did you wish you played a bassist instead?
No, it was more fun doing something that I didn't know anything about. And it was interesting because when they send me the timpani parts,
uh-huh.
Being a bass player, it's not that much difference. It's basically the still the low fundamental parts. And but I would go with these parts to stop at the pits of the shows I was involved with, and each of the percussionists in the Broadway shows, each of them would show me a little approach to how to play this part. So by the time I went in, I had a pretty good understanding of what the timpani part of it was supposed to be like.
Yeah, and the life that the show depicts of the musician, I mean, that's something that you know, and I guess what we see in Mozart and Zurich, that's accurate, isn't it?
Well, I'm not deep in the freelance classical world. I can tell you something that I did know nothing about, which is I'm probably one of the few guys that in the late 60s and 70s who played at all those places, the Fillmore East, the Fillmore West, was probably one of the few guys that was not even smoking grass. So I completely, the whole drug part of the 60s and 70s completely bypassed me. So when they sort of mentioned some of the names of these drugs, I had no idea what these were. And I called up my then 16-year-old granddaughter, who was very sweet, and she said, "Oh, I know exactly what they are. Pause. But, Grandpa, I want you to know I've never done them. I've never done them, really. I promise. I've never, never done them." So I learned more about drugs with the role of Didi, the percussionist drug dealer, than I ever knew in the 60s and 70s.
And back to the album, I really hope you do another one, because I can think of, other songs that you could do. When you listen to it now, as it's to be re-released shortly, it's something that you're obviously very proud of, isn't it?
Very proud of it. Very proud of it. Very proud of all the work that all of us did to put it together. I thought the musicians that we got on involved were very involved and very helpful. And my friend David Spinoza, who I got to kind of help co-produce it with me, and the engineer, Michael Golub, all of us. It was a wonderful experience. And it was so great that Joe, when I was doing it, I had no idea what I was going to do with it once it was over. It's not that I had a game plan in mind. And when we were sort of mixing it, I was sort of sorry that the thing was over, because we had such a great, great time doing it. And I think that great time that we had doing it hopefully one can hear that we had a great time doing it as well.
Yeah, it's such an enjoyable thing to listen to. John, it's been delightful to speak with you. Congratulations on this album again. All the best.
Thanks, Joe, so much. Appreciate spending the time with you.
Visit johnmillerbass.com, all one word, johnmillerbass.com for the CD if you want to order it. And, of course, it's available in all the ways that one can stream, download music nowadays. Stage Door Johnny, John Miller Takes on Broadway, the 10th anniversary edition is out Friday, the 21st of June. John Miller joined me on the line from New York City and Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.